You're listening to the Eyes on Isles podcast with Matt O'Leary and Mitch Anderson.
Welcome to Eyes on Isles podcast episode, I've lost count, 8? Are we at 8? Yeah, there we go. Episode 8. Made it as grandiose as I could possibly make it. How are you doing, Matt?
I'm surviving. I'm going. We were just talking off the air a little bit. It's been a little bit of a rough week. So if my voice sounds a little off today, more annoying than usual, I apologize in advance. But I am excited to watch some West Coast hockey. Well, attempt to. I'll probably fall asleep after the first, if we're being honest. But
So you got you're on the mic, Mitch Anderson, co-expert for Eyes on Isles. And on the other side, you got co-expert Matt O'Leary coming down with a cold over there. And yeah, so the Islanders are finally playing regular hockey. They've got 3 games under their belt, and they're now headed out to California to play another 3 games against the California teams. Before we get into like digesting what happened so far and what's happening going forward, let's talk about some of the stuff that's happened a little bit off the ice. Absolutely off the ice. Let's talk about the fact that Hosang missed the first game for a healthy scratch, and Ryan Pulock is still a healthy scratch today against the Ducks. What the heck is going on there?
I don't get it. I read the tweet from Staple, and I thought like I traveled back in time and was now living in the Jack Capuano era once more. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. I had to like read it over 3 times to make sure that I wasn't like hallucinating or something, because...
So you're talking about the Hosang tweet, right, at the beginning of the
exactly.
season?
Exactly. It was the day before, so Thursday evening, so almost a week ago now. I couldn't believe it. Why? And for Jason Chimera, I don't get it. And I think you broke it down pretty good during opening night. You explained, like, Chimera was barely even on the ice. He wasn't really that much of a factor. So why are you going with him over a guy like Hosang, who can actually carry the puck into the zone? Well, which the Islanders struggle with, and he's a young, exciting player. Like it just didn't add up to me, and I didn't understand the argument for it. Like they're playing back-to-back games. It's not like he's in net. Like he's a 21-year-old kid. I'm pretty sure he could play hockey 2 days in a row.
Yeah, I think for me the big thing was almost like a sense of betrayal, kind of like you said, where we thought we were heading into this era of no more Capua nonsense or Capua nonsense. I don't know how to pronounce it. Our previous writer for our site came up with this catchy tagline for the crazy things that Jack Capuano says. You know, the puck luck and bad bounces and moves like this, where he would ice a veteran over a young player for no apparent reason whatsoever. So, and we thought we had that when, not only when Jack Capuano was fired, but just recently this season when Doug Weight came out and said, I will play youth over vets if they outplay those vets. And everyone saw the first half of that. I will play vets over, or youth over vets. And we all went, yay, that's amazing. Woo, Doug Weight. And now, come day one of the season, we're like, oh, wait a second. There was the other half of that where he's, if they outplay them, should have caught on to that. Because that's exactly what happened, is that what does he mean by outplay them? Because by all indications, just like you said, Hosang should be able to outplay Chimera. And what Chimera is bringing to the ice or the table, even in Doug Weight's terms, is he brings game presence, he's a veteran, and he's got speed. Well, Hosang isn't slow, so he's got that. He's got more, like you said, offensive ability of dragging that puck into the zone, which Chimera doesn't have. He's a good outlet guy, don't get me wrong, but he was barely on the ice. So why would you? It just didn't make any sense, and it was exactly like you said. It felt like we were taking 2 steps back, going, I thought we fired this guy. Didn't we fire this guy like a year ago? Why is he still here? Oh, it's just a new guy saying the same thing. Ugh.
Right, which I think that's what we were afraid of when they made the switch to Doug Weight initially, that like it'd be more of just the same, you know, because it seemed like he was Jack Capuano's like understudy, you know, and Cappy took him under his wing a little bit. And last year, that wasn't the case at all. He seemed to really like change the culture, and it seemed to be a little bit different. So when this news broke the day before the season, I was definitely taken back by it, and it made me feel like the Islanders were taking a step back, because as you said, it seemed like this was going to be a youth movement like where Barzal would play, Bo would play, Ho Sang would play, and it'd be a young, exciting team mixed in with some veterans. And to see them go the veteran route on opening night, it didn't make any sense to me. I don't think you can't have Kuhlman and Chimera in the lineup at the same time. It's got to be one or the other.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely agree. And that's what the fourth line is for. You get one of those guys out there. I like Kuhlman on the fourth line, but I also really like Jason Chimera. I don't think that he should be on the bench. I think what he gives to the team is a great outlet guy. And on that fourth line, with his speed, he's a great forechecker as well. I think he's great on that fourth line, and I would prefer him over Nikolai Kuhlman, but I don't make the decisions. So I just blog about it, and I hope that my influence carries over to the team somehow.
You know those, like the GIFs where it's like, what exactly do you do here? That's what I always think of whenever I see Nikolai Kuhlman. Because he's not really fast. I guess you could say he's a defensive player, fine, but...
Yeah, sure. A responsible player on the ice, sure.
Yeah, but I don't know. He just doesn't do it for me. It's like he's just taking up a spot there, you know?
Yeah. Okay, so let's move to Pulock then, or Pulock, whatever you want to. Anyways, I've heard Pulock and Pulock, whatever. Why isn't he playing yet? I hear people say that they don't like him. One of our writers even used the word they hate him, which almost kind of makes sense. But then I've also kind of get like the undertone that maybe he's not right physically, like something's maybe wrong. What's your take on all of this?
I don't know what to think. I don't know if it's physical, but it's definitely strange because last year he only played one game, literally one game, got hurt. And I know I thought like, okay, once he was healthy, he'd come back up and play. But that never happened.
Yeah.
And now this year,
not at all.
He actually makes the roster, and guess what? He's still not playing. So... it makes zero sense to me. I don't understand the direction they're coming from. I think he should be in the lineup, but maybe they're seeing something that we're not. I don't know. That's the only explanation that I can think of. He didn't have a great preseason, but you would think based off of where they drafted him and where he could be in his development and what he could add to the power play that you would want him on the ice on a nightly basis, but that hasn't been the case four games in so far.
Right. I'm still not sure of it. Like, keep in mind, this is a guy that we used. I talk like I'm part of the team. I'm not. I just, again, basement blogger. That's all I do. My basement is nice, but it's definitely a basement blogging situation going on here. And it is my basement. My mom doesn't live here, by the way.
Anymore.
Anymore. That's right. The Islanders used a spot for Pulock on their expansion roster, right? The protected list. So they saw something in him then that it was worth protecting, right? They gave up a first-round pick, and they forced Vegas Golden Knights to take J.F. Berube, who is no longer with anyone in the NHL at this point. Well, he might still be with the Winchester Roadhogs or whatever they're called, the Blackhawks affiliate. But he's no longer there. So they saw something in him then. That was just a couple months ago, and they don't see that now. I understand he had a bad, he didn't have, maybe not a bad, but he at least didn't have a good training camp. So there's something, and from according to Doug Wade today, he just likes the way that Mayfield is playing. Mayfield didn't have a good game last game. He had a good game against the Sabres, for sure, but who on the team didn't necessarily, right? Except for maybe penalty killers. So I don't know what they're not seeing or what's going on there. It seems by all indications as well, we just have better players. Well, that's not true. You got Dennis Seidenberg on there and he's not that great right now. You have Calvin DeFaun who hasn't been playing that well, but they're like, you just gave him $3.3 million. You want to make sure that that's right before you bench him. And from what we've seen by this team, they're not going to bench vets anyways.
Right. But you would think that maybe over... he would play over a 137-year-old Dennis Seidenberg.
Yeah, sure. You would hope, especially not just because of the age, but because of the way Seidenberg is playing right now, which is not very well. So you're going, that's an easy swap. Let's give this 38-year-old, or I don't even think he's that old. I think he's 36.
It feels like he's super old, though. He's playing like he's super old.
Right now he is. He looks like he's got center blocks on. and it, which is the opposite of what he was last year, right? Right out of the gates, he was amazing. He's 36 right now. Turning 37, I believe, in January or something. Okay. Anyways, doesn't matter when he's turning 37. Happy birthday, whenever that happens. This is July. I just, if he's not playing well, let him sit out and bring on the young guy. It just, it doesn't seem to make any sense to do it the other way around. Unless they just don't like Pulak or they're seeing something they don't like from him. And obviously we're not going to get the answer to that because it wouldn't make any sense, but that seems to be the case.
If that is the case, then they should move him before they put him on the ice and then everyone realizes, hey, this kid can't play on the NHL level.
Mm-hmm. When he's still got worth.
Right, because the thing with prospects is once you bring them up, their value in it goes down exponentially. So the more he plays at the NHL level, and the more, and this is solely speaking if the Islanders just believe that he's not a part of the future here. He certainly could be. I think he could be a very solid NHL defenseman, but that's yet to be seen because they're not really playing him. And maybe they're shopping him around, seeing if they can get anything for him. I don't know. I'm just trying to...
One could only hope.
I'm just trying to get an explanation for this.
Yeah, that's. I think that's best case scenario of him not playing. I really do. Like outside of that, I just don't understand why you wouldn't want to play him. But that, again, we don't make the decisions, so we're stuck just trying to interpret them. Read the tea leaves. That's what we're trying to do. Let's go do something a little bit more speculative and maybe a little bit more fun. I put something out earlier this week about Islanders players that are that could potentially win an individual NHL award. So we know we haven't won one of these in a long time, if you don't include Travis Hamonic's trophy last year for his charity work, which he very much deserved. I don't want to undercut that. But it's not the awards that everyone's tuning in for, right?
No.
They're tuning in for the Art Ross. They're tuning in for the Calders, the Vezinas, those fancy-dancy Norris, Jack Adams trophies. So what I put out is I tried to figure out who on the Islanders could win one of those individual trophies. And I came up with a John Tavares for the Art Ross, which seems pretty self-explanatory. Like the guy could score a point a game. So you're if you're looking at an 82-point player minimum, you're thinking he's at least in the conversation if you don't have a McDavid putting up 100 points again or an Ovi putting up 192 goals.
Right.
Which he's on pace for. Oh, sorry, 191 goals he's on pace for.
Insanity.
Yeah, Nick Leddy could very much win the Norris Trophy. And we'll talk more about these in individually once I list them all off. Doug Weight can win the Jack Adams. I put Barzal as the Calder Trophy. I know I'd previously placed Hosang, but with his benching, or not benching, his scratch in the first game, I thought, the Isles are already gun-shy with Hosang. I could see him not playing other games, whereas Barzal, I think they'll put in every game as throughout the season if he's fit, no matter what.
Okay, so that's more of he's going to play 82 games. And
yeah, so he's going to have a better chance of doing it.
Yeah, I agree with those. I think they're the most logical choices. I can't see really anybody else making a play in. Like, I don't think we're going to see Thomas Greiss or Yaroslav Halak winning any awards.
No, I don't think so.
But if I had to put a guess on which one's the most likely, I guess I would either go with Barzal or... This one might come as a shock, but wait, if they overachieve, like let's say, I don't know, they get hot in the playoffs and somehow go to the Eastern Conference.
Well, voting happens before the playoffs, if I understand.
Okay, well then never mind. Just Barzal then.
Yeah. Well, see, like I like the case for Weight. I really do. Like we got to think of it. Like they're gonna factor in last year as well. They shouldn't, but that's still going to be part of whoever's voting's narrative, mm-hmm. right? They're going to remember the fact that they went 24-12 and 2-4. And if he does a similar record, so I did the pace statistics for that, and that's a 104-point season this year, which isn't too far off the mark. Like, 104 points isn't going to get you at the top of the division. It's going to float you somewhere around that wild, like just maybe just above the wild card, which is what we're looking at right now. I'm going to just check my set. Yeah, 104 points. So it'd be a 49-25-8 record if he matches the same pace as he did in the first half of the season or the second half of the season last year when he started coaching. So it's really possible that he does that. Of course, this is not looking at the field as well, right? We have to consider that. If Toronto does what Toronto's doing for the next 82 games, forget about it. Babcock's a shoo-in just for like a lifetime achievement award, regardless of what Toronto did.
Right.
My big one is Nick Leddy. I really think he could. The potential's there. Like, this guy's putting up more and more points every year, and he put up 46 last season, and he started off slowly. If he had started off at the same pace as he was in the second half or the later half of the season, this guy is looking at 55 to 60 points, and that's getting you at least at the table, right? It doesn't eclipse the Burns or the Carlsons, generally speaking, but if the Burns and Carlsons have an okay year, you're looking at him at least getting into the discussion. And we got to remember, Drew Doughty won the award, and he only put up like 54 points. Meanwhile, Carlson had 88 points that season.
Right. So I definitely think he should be in the conversation for it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Burns is probably more appealing because he's going to put up the higher point totals and goal totals. But I could certainly see Leddy putting over 50 points, which I think he's going to have to do to be in the conversation. If he's around the same as last year, would you say 46 last year?
Yeah.
Then I'm not so sure, but over 50.
Oh yeah, agreed. Yeah, I don't think if he gets anything less than 50, then don't even think about it. He's not even going to get a ballot. But if he gets anything above 50, then ballots are going to start coming in for him. He may not get top notch ballots, but the higher he gets above that 50 mark, the more ballots he's going to get. That's just how it works.
Right.
Unfortunately, sometimes for some people.
Yeah, which makes sense in a way, but.
Yeah. Let's go to some arena talk, because that was the big talk of the town yesterday. If anyone is tuning in to Twitter, we all got like the flurry of tweets where John Ledecky was talking to media at a restaurant, and it just went all over the place. It was maybe not all over the place. It was just kind of one hit after another. It was like the greatest hits of New York Islanders arena drama for this season. First one was, we're going to Belmont. We're going to do Belmont, and our focus is there. And then it was, we're going to stay at Barclays for a year. And then it was, we're not going to Nassau Coliseum. Not ever, ever, never, ever. He was Taylor Swifting that like crazy.
Yeah, so for the Islanders fan perspective, it went like, yay, to no, to even more depressed. It was like a steep incline, and then it went crashing down after that. Because,
yeah,
not that, look, I want them to go to Belmont, but I'd be lying if I didn't say that a small part of me doesn't want them to go back to Nassau Coliseum, which is what a lot of Islander fans still feel. I think they realize it's unrealistic, but you still have those feelings.
Yeah, well, we'll get to fans' reactions the later segment of the show, but I don't understand why we're still hung up on Nassau. I get that that's where we want them to go, but based off what we know they're trying to do at Belmont, which is an 18,000 to 20,000 seat stadium, something along the lines between Rogers Place in Edmonton and Little Caesars Arena in Detroit, they can't do that at Nassau. That's just not economic. Like that's not going to happen. And the only reason that they're trying to build that big of a stadium is because that's what it's going to take to make an economically viable team, like Ledecky had said, to pay at the cap for season upon season. Now, if we fill those seats, that's another question. Like that is a very reasonable thing for someone to lift their hand and say, Mr. Ledecky, how are you going to fill those seats? Because we're not doing it now, and we weren't doing it before. Just because you're going to add another like 5,000 seats doesn't mean you're going to fill them.
Fair point.
So that's going to be a problem. The Barclays thing, I don't understand why people are mad about that, because they're in the timeline of building stadiums, these things don't go up overnight. It took 2 years from the time the shovel hit the ground to when it was open for the Barclays Center to be built. And that's not counting the bureaucratic, I think it was at least 3 years before that, getting all the stuff in place and all the funding before the shovels even hit the ground. We're still in that 3-year process right now. Today, there's still 3 years to go maybe before the shovel hits the ground. So, like, we still need to play somewhere. And the Barclays is where we're at now. So why would we leave there? They're paying us $50 million to stay there for now. Why would we go anywhere else? We're in a negotiation window at this moment. It doesn't make sense to go anywhere else.
Because the ice surface is terrible and John Tavares is going to go to Toronto. That's why.
God, can we stop with the ice? I get it. The ice surface sucks. Hey, we're apparently going to be in the top 50% of ice surface if John Ledecky and Gar Snow are to be believed recently. What they did, I don't know. They need steel piping. They're not going to put in steel piping. We all know that. That's a narrative we're going to keep on hearing. But in a new building, they're going to get steel piping. Yay. But for now, we have to deal with PVC piping. I don't know what they're going to do to make the ice better and to the, in the top 50% of the league, however you measure that. I don't know how they're going to do that, but he's just throwing stuff out there. Barclays is what you don't want to move a fan base three times in the last like 6 years.
No.
Right? Like that can't happen.
Difficult to do. And then to continue to sustain your fan base after all those moves is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Like it's just not feasible to do. It's not business savvy. I understand the appeal of going to Nassau Coliseum, and if we could make Nassau Coliseum be an 18,000 seat stadium, then I'd say, well, it doesn't make sense to go to Belmont. It just doesn't. If we could retrofit, maybe not retrofit, but if we can increase the capacity of Nassau Coliseum, then let's do that, because that's the best play possible. But that's not going to happen. They just spent, $120 million revamping it into this typewriter facade? Like, it's just not going to go. They can add 2,000 at most, but we need another 5 to 6. So it just doesn't make sense. I'm sorry. It just doesn't make sense.
No, you're right, realistically. I just think a lot of fans, like we said, we're going to get into that in a little bit, why fans can't let go of the Coliseum. But I think really Belmont is the best option, and I think we're just in that waiting period for when is it going to finally come through that makes the fans a little uneasy.
Yeah, because I think like you're alluding to is that the fate of Belmont is in the hands of the state, and the state don't work real quick.
No, I don't really trust New York State to move quickly and efficiently in this process.
Yeah, but from what everything I've heard, at least from Randy Johnson of Newsday, she said that this could be done by January.
Okay.
Now we'll see if that plays out, and that was now, when the RFP process was initially closed, and all bureaucrats are optimistic, we're gonna get this done, and we're gonna get this done right, like they always do whenever a project happens. Bureaucrats are the most optimistic people on day one and the most pessimistic people on day n plus one at the end,
right?
Like that. So how long this takes could take forever, but they seem to want to get it done. Listen, they've been waiting forever to get this done already with the Cosmos. That's already been going on for three or four years. So they want something done. They want it done quick. So they might rubber stamp this quickly, but might is a very lofty term that I'm using.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to have to see there, but I think we're both in agreement that with these new arena developments and what Ledecky has been saying, that it seems like the sole focus is Belmont or bust. That's it.
Yeah. Which I'm happy for. That's what I want to see, and he may just be pandering. Although it serves him to pander because he's trying to drum up more support for what he's trying to do. But it doesn't make sense to do anything else but Belmont. It just doesn't. Sorry, Nassau.
Sorry.
It's not really that far. I mean, you're just taking Hempstead Turnpike a little further west. That's all. You could drive past the Coliseum and wave as you go.
That's right. But I think people are still mad that, at least as it stands now, there won't be any tailgating at Belmont.
Oh, really?
Like they said, we won't allow it. I know. That's definitely a problem for the fan base, and I can absolutely sympathize with that. Like that is not something, and that could be revised, right? Again, this thing isn't going to be built tomorrow. Whatever rules exist right now can absolutely be revisited tomorrow. Like we said, it could take 3 years to get the paperwork and all that sorted out before a shovel hits the ground, and then 2 years from there to build it. So we're looking at a 5-year timeline at best. Maybe not at best. That's not at best. A reasonable 5-year timeline. They have 5 years to change that rule and for Ledecky to try to get that rule changed. I'm not sure like what kind of rule that is, if that's just like a Belmont rule, if that's a state rule. I wouldn't imagine it's a state rule if we were allowed to do it at Nassau. Although it might be because it's not state land, so I don't know how that works out necessarily in this case, but that could definitely be changed.
Yes.
So have hope for now.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Okay, so next we're going to go on to talking about the season. Let's talk about some hockey, some relevant hockey, and some results. So the Islanders went on a three-game trip. No, sorry, it wasn't a three-game trip. I'm thinking of what they're going to do tonight as of now. They played three games. One was away, two were at home. The first one was a 5-0 drubbing to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And then they won 6-3 against the Buffalo Sabres and then lost 3-2 to the St. Louis Blues in overtime. Matt, what are your takeaways from those three games? Give me your hottest hot take.
I think my hottest hot take was from the first game when I said the Islanders' defense looks like straight poo. And and a lot of people got mad at me on Twitter for that.
What?
But I stand by that decision. Because they did. And then they were like, no, it's just Calvin DeHaan that looks like straight poo. And I was like,
oh my God.
Wrong, folks. It is not just Calvin DeHaan. But the first game was a rough one because it seemed Columbus scored right away, like a minute into the game. And then from there, the wheels just fell off and they couldn't get anything going.
What do you think it is, though? Like, I wrote something today about this whole we did a round table with everyone on staff, and we got. I tried to figure out what it was that they weren't like that was going on. What was the takeaway from this season so far? And for me, it just doesn't seem like they have a winning strategy yet. They know what their roster is and they know the way they want to play, but they're not able to execute that. Which, case in point, those three games are three completely different types of games played by the Islanders. With that 5-0 loss, they looked just completely disjointed, where no one necessarily knew exactly how everyone was about to play.
Yeah, I could agree with that. They didn't look like they were prepared, maybe. I don't know if that's the right word, but...
Yeah, I think for the Blues game, that is definitely going to be the word I'm going to use. But this one, I don't know about that.
They just looked like they couldn't stay, you know, keep up with Columbus. Like, they looked like Columbus was on just a completely another level. They were, Panarin looked great, I thought. And you didn't necessarily see that initial, chemistry, I guess, for the Islanders in the first game.
No, not at, like there was a few times where Eberle found Tavares with some nice passes, but nothing materialized, which is the whole point of this, right? Like, that's great that you can find him on the ice, but we need goals to come out of this. And the Islanders just weren't getting any. They just weren't getting enough looks. I like your take on the defense in so much as it just didn't seem like the defense was working in connection with the offense, whereas the two were operating on two different levels. Mm-hmm. So it just didn't seem like they were playing the same game or even playing the same game plan. And I'm sure they were. And I'm sure, like, listen, it was the first game of the season, so I'm sure there's cobwebs. I'm sure there's rust and there's things to work out, even though there was a 6-game preseason. Or was it 8? Yeah, it was 8. 6-0-2. It's going to happen. But going into the win in against Buffalo and the loss against the Blues, some of those mistakes are still happening where the offense and the defense looks disjointed and this lack of preparation. It seems, I'm sure they're very well drilled and very well prepared. It just, when it comes to the ice on game day, it just seems that some of that preparation isn't there necessarily.
Yeah.
So, like, what do you take away from that 6-3 win then? Well, we'll go in order chronologically.
That showed me what the offense could look like on a good night. Like, that's probably your potential right there. You got a couple Tavares goals. You got a couple from Cizikas. It just looked like, and granted, it was against the worst Buffalo team. But they...
Yeah, that's true.
But they looked like, I don't know, the pieces on offense just seemed to be moving a little bit better. And they were finding the right guy and making the right passes and stuff like that. And I thought the defense looked a little bit better in the second game.
Yeah, I think they looked fine, and the communication was definitely better, and maybe it was just they're coming home, and so the momentum and the mojo from being in the building and the Barclays Center rocking really kind of got to them and helped them and gave them that, like, whatever you want to call it, boost, if you want to call it fifth-line boost that they do in Columbus, or if you want to call it the seventh-man boost. It was there, and it was obvious, and they picked up on that. And the offense was rocking, and it was doing exactly what you wanted to do, but the defense was not. Listen, they gave up 2 shorthanded goals. That can't happen. Like, that's just, I'm sorry, that can't happen. In a single game, that's borderline inexcusable. I know they still won 6-3, but that can't happen at all.
Yeah, that second period was really weird because I think we saw four shorthanded goals in that period alone, right? Two from the Islanders and two from the Sabres. Right.
So no one was on the mark. And I don't know what it was, but maybe it was just Barclay Center mojo where the power plays just weren't going to work or they were going to work in reverse. So, which is almost in the Islanders' favor because their power play is terrible. So if the penalty kill is going to be that much amazing, just don't take a power play.
That's one of the things that I'm still concerned with three games in so far is the power play. It's still – it doesn't seem right. I don't know if what Gomez is doing with these guys, but they just aren't – they haven't for a long time been able to get anything going on that power play. And if they continue to struggle with it, it's going to hold them back a little bit this year.
Oh, hard. Well, listen, I think the Islanders were the only team just like – almost in the playoffs that were in the bottom half of, well, I shouldn't say that. I don't know necessarily. But the fact, what I want to say is that they were third worst in the league in terms of power play efficiency. That is terrible. They were just above the Red Wings and the Avalanche at 15%. And it's not looking that this season is any better, even though they, like you said, they brought in Gomez, and it's both Gomez and Buckberger that are in charge of the power play. So they have two dedicated resources for the power play, and it's still not working, and or it's working even worse than when Doug Weight was doing it in tandem with everything else that he had to do on the Islanders. So I'm also concerned. I don't know what to do. It just doesn't look like they're cycling the puck. Like they have no urgency in moving the puck around at all, and so that's a problem. When you can't move players out of position, they can just huddle around like the Blues did, and they're fine with being stationary. Heck, they're the ones that have to move around the most. So if you're not moving them and getting them tired, what are you doing?
Right. That, and you kind of answered the question that I was going to ask you right now, but I was going to say, do you think it's a personnel thing or a strategy thing?
I think it's a strategy thing. I really do. Like it just really seemed like the Islanders were reluctant to move the puck around, which is what you – like that is power play 101. You want to move that puck around the perimeter, and you want to stretch those four players or three players out there to open gaps – so you can filter that extra player in and take advantage of the gap that they've created. They weren't doing any of that. They were moving it around the perimeter, but they weren't doing any. There was no urgency. They were very pedantic.
Yeah, I agree. I was gonna say I think it's definitely strategy in this situation, because on paper this power play should be improved with the guys that they're running out there now, and it really hasn't been.
No, it's been worse so far. You know, they're 0-9, or is it 0-10? I forget. Oh, it's one of those. 0-9 or 0-10, it's still terrible.
Yeah, they're still 0-4.
I don't know how it is now, but I know there are five teams that are locked at 0% efficiency in the NHL, and the Isles were one of them.
Yeah.
Not good. Great. What about the 3-2 loss to the Blues? My takeaway, I'm just going to throw it out there, was the fact that they couldn't deal with that pressure. I said it a bunch of times, but like the forecheck that the Blues were thrown out there was killing the Islanders. Case in point, that first Blues goal, which was a terrible giveaway. I wouldn't even call it a giveaway, but DeHaan just dumped the puck into the middle of the ice to a Blues player that was absolutely alone, gifted the puck right in the middle of the ice instead of playing it off the boards in a safer play down the wing. He throws it in the middle and someone intercepts it easily. What was that all about? It was that forecheck pressure that the Islanders just couldn't deal with.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that one. I think that I would agree saying with in the third game with what you just said. I would also say, though, Greiss did look better, and that was one of my other takeaways, that he really stood on his head in the third period and kept him in the game. So, just to throw a positive one out there in a loss, I would say that Greiss bouncing back in his second outing, that'd be one of my takeaways as well.
Yeah, because he looked absolutely terrible in that 5-0 loss, and you're always like, oh, God, what's happening with Greiss? And you're right. He absolutely bounced back in that 3-2. He kept the Islanders in that, even though they were losing 2-0. The only way the Islanders got out of that game with a point is because of Greiss. Yes, I know Ladd and Lee scored, but if it weren't for like two huge saves that you mentioned in that third period, The Islanders were getting out of there with a 4-0 loss.
Right. So I definitely wanted to give credit to Greiser there.
Good call.
And Halak is starting the game tonight, right? So it's going to be an even split 2-2, I want to say.
Yeah, and I think that that's the strategy going forward. I know that, that Wade has been pretty coy with his starting goalies and what the strategy is, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't, you know, a straight 50 split.
I'm okay with that, honestly. It keeps both guys fresh, and I think they're both NHL-capable goalies, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah, that sounds fine to me as well. Like, why not? Like, if they're going to both, on fresh nights, dole you out a .920 save percentage and, like, just above 2 goals against average, I'll live with that easily. That's great goaltending in the NHL. Well, maybe not great. It's really good. It's solid goaltending, and you can easily win games with that, with allowing 2 goals or fewer. So...
Right.
A plus.
We just have to see if the defense could get their stuff together, let's say.
Yeah. Yeah. Or if the Isles can figure out how to structure that D, how to structure those pairings. So.
Yes.
And I don't want to touch that first pairing. It seems that Letty Boychuk is working well. It's anything below that. And Hickey. Hickey is doing really well, man. I know I'm not seeing a lot of Hickey hate, but usually there's a lot of Hickey hate out there. And those first 2 games, he was a plus 10 and a plus 11, if I'm not mistaken, Corsi 5-on-5, which was ahead of everyone else on the team. He was a minus 2 or a plus 2 within that range against St. Louis. But, you know, 2 games out of 3, that's pretty darn good, considering everyone else was terrible in all those games. So
yeah, Hickey's definitely good job, been Hickey. A bright spot. On the struggling defense so far. I would definitely throw him in the mix.
Heck yeah. You want to move over to some social stuff? I don't know if you've got anything else you want to talk about on this. These 3 games. It's 3 games. Like, it's hard to take these takeaways too seriously because it's only 3 games. Like, things can change dramatically from here on in. Like, listen, the Isles had a terrible 41 games last season, and they almost still made the playoffs with only 40 games. So the fact that there's 79 to go... There's still lots of time for them to do a lot of stuff.
Right. Here. It is still a small sample size we're looking at, so I'm not, like, huge overreacting one way or the other. But, yeah, that was pretty much it. I think we hit on everything for the first 3 games of the year.
Beauty. Okay. Sociables. Let's get to some whatever's happening in social media. The first one that I wanted to bring up, I'm going to go right in on it and ask you. I'm going to save your voice.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I did that. See, like, that was perfect. That worked out so perfectly. Marc Bergevin was spotted at the Isles and Blues game. So if no one knows who Marc Bergevin is, he is the GM for the Montreal Canadiens. And so when Staple tweeted that out, Twitter went aflutter and started thinking of all kinds of trade rumors. And I don't fault them. I posted a piece about Alex Galchenyuk later that night. Was it? No, the next day. About how the Isles still pursue Alex Galchenyuk. And it's strictly because of the fact that Bergevin was at the game.
Yeah.
Now, what do you think of that?
I definitely think it gives you the right to get your creative juices flowing and concocting a nice trade piece. I don't know if it's necessarily, like, if he was there for the Islanders, per se.
Right.
But it would be interesting to see if Garth would make a trade this early on in a season.
Yeah. Well, like, it's not like he was there to watch the Blues, and maybe he was, but what is he going to get out of the Blues? A broken Robbie Fabry? They're not getting rid of Alex Pietrangelo. Jake Allen isn't going anywhere, so, like, what is he hoping to get out of them?
Yeah.
At this point, I think the Blues are playing with house money because they weren't supposed to be this good this year, and they're looking pretty darn good. So I don't think they're going to look to move anything right now.
No, probably not. So I could see why the Islanders fans are getting into this and reading into it a little bit. I certainly did. I thought Galchenyuk right away when I saw that. And I either wrote or tweeted earlier, like, over the summer, that Galchenyuk could be a nice addition to this team. And I still, even if you still want Barzal to be the second line center, you could still plug Galchenyuk in on that second line and you're just as a winger and still bolster your top 6 even more.
Yeah, see, that's where I differ. I want to bring Galchenyuk in, but I don't want to bring him in as a winger. That's why he's not doing that well in Montreal is because they false started him so frequently. He's playing the wing. He's sometimes playing center. He's playing on the fourth line now. Like, if I'm bringing Galchenyuk in, it's because I'm bringing him to play that center role. If the idea is to bring him into play as a winger, there are other wingers out there that are probably better than him that we can get.
Okay.
I think.
That's right. Yeah. Because I know a lot of people cite his face-off percentage for why he wouldn't be a good second-line center.
I know, but like face-off percentages aren't all like they're not all what it used to be. Like, it doesn't really mean that much. You can lose a face-off on purpose, and even then, face-off win percentages, they're flimsy. Like, it doesn't necessarily mean anything. Like, it could be that they won the face-off, and it could not be. Like, it's playing with the house decides. Like, they count the stats. So like, I'm really not reliant on that. If he's within the 50% range, I'm okay. That's fine with me.
All right. Yeah, I still think he'd be an interesting addition. I'm all right with that. Depends on who they give up, but
right, that's true. So my trade proposal, I had Dahan and or Hickey. Dahan or Hickey and Nelson as well as a second round pick next year.
Yeah, I'd do it.
Yeah. So I think anyone on the Isles side would do it. I'm not so sure about Montreal. I saw a few people from the Montreal market say, like, oui, j'aime ça, let's do it. Là. So I think we do that, and they're okay with it. But I think that's a very small minority of Montreal Canadiens fans.
That was good. Was that French?
Oh, yes. Oui, mon ami, c'était le français, mais certainement.
Oui.
Parfait.
That's all I got.
That's fine. That's all right. All right, so we talked about it earlier, where his fans still can't let go of the Coliseum. And I got a few tweets that I brought up. First, we got Isles Barn, or at Isles Barn, that said Coliseum should always be on the table. Like, only if they can increase the capacity beyond 15,000.
Yeah, that's they're going to have to make some pretty big changes if they want the Islanders to come back. So for things are right now, it's not really in play.
And like, why would they just spent a ton of money to do that? I don't think the county is going to want to spend more money to do it. And when I'm talking more money, I'm talking like hundreds of millions to build it. Not build it, but revamp it. Like $300 to $400 to $500 million to add seats. Maybe not 500. That might be a lot. I'm not a contractor, but at least another $100 million to make it up to NHL caliber, or at least not only NHL caliber, but economically viable in the NHL.
Right.
So, like, just because they're above 13,000, ooh, great. Well, that's not great. That is not economically viable in years to come, which is what they're trying to do here. Like, that might be fine right now if we can fill it. But in 2 to 3 years, that might not be fine when the NHL cap goes up, when Seattle joins the league and another $500 million floods into the market and bumps up the NHL cap.
Yeah, that's
like that.
If you want the Islanders to play to the top of the cap, then you're probably going to want them to go to Belmont.
Yeah, exactly. And then I got another one from the Real Sadowski. I was all for the Isles staying at the Coliseum, the Lighthouse Project, and Wang's redevelopment of the hub. An area at Belmont is dumb. Well, it's not. I'm sorry. It really isn't dumb. Like, where else are they going to go? And if your only answer is the Coliseum, well, you got to rethink what your answer is going to be, and you got to rethink of the climate you're bringing the Islanders in. I understand we want to bring them back home, and I understand we want to bring them back to their traditional arena. That's fine, and I understand the nostalgia, and it makes sense with that narrative and that narrative only. But when it comes to the economics of it, it can't be, the team cannot be supported economically in Nassau. It just can't. I would love if it could, and if someone can crunch the math and show me that it's economically viable, then I'll change my mind, lickety split. I will pull a John Carrier right now and flip flop on this. But until such a time, I'm sorry. It's just I can't do it.
No, I don't blame you. Like, it's tough for me to admit because I am biased towards the Coliseum, but the Belmont Arena is not dumb, and we hit on it a lot tonight, but I think it is the best and most realistic option going forward.
Yeah, agreed. That's all I had written down for my social segments. Did you want to bring anything else up? Did you see anything else catch your eye?
You're not going to talk about you getting murdered by Calvin Dahan? Are we not going to talk about that?
Can you be my friend, please?
No.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, that's exactly how that went. Mitch from like his basement blogger chair was like, at Calvin DeHaan, do you love me? And he was like, pass.
Hard pass. And I was like, we come from Ottawa, the same place, please. And he was like, I'm good. Literally, that's what he wrote. I'm good. And I went, oh, he doesn't want to be my friend. That's it. I just wanted to see. I thought I'd ask. I thought I'd see. And I got shut down. You know what? As a skinny guy with an acne problem in high school, I'm used to it. So it was no skin off my back. He got me good. It was a good zinger. I hope he likes my zinger back to him. We'll see. I know he's got more important things to do than answer me on Twitter right now. He's like, they're playing a game in 7 minutes. So I'll wait. I'll wait.
We're patiently awaiting the response.
But I accept his answer, and that's fun. And I'm glad other people can join in and say, like, ha ha, it's an IELTS, you guys suck. Well, whatever.
You should have left the sliding into the DMs to the millennial of the group. The father of two, probably not the best to go sliding into DMs. Let's be real here.
I don't know how to work it out. I haven't had to make friends in forever, so it's tough for a father of two to go out there, make himself vulnerable all over again.
And on social media, too.
That's right. I did it in front of all of your eyes. I have nothing to hide. I am just a weird Canadian guy looking for another Canadian guy to be his friend.
That's all. Is that too much to ask?
That is probably the most wholesome thing that has ever happened on this show.
Probably. But yeah, I couldn't let the show go by without bringing up Mitch getting absolutely shut down by Calvin DeHaan. That was pretty amazing.
That's fair. Yeah, good job, Calvin. Good job. That's all I have then. Well, I hope that's all you have. Well, have I been roasted by anyone else that I'm not aware of?
No, but next week, who knows? We could probably get roasted by somebody else.
Yeah, maybe someone else. We'll see. So for now, make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the show on iTunes. It helps us reach more people, maybe even Calvin DeHaan, who we've kind of reached, but, you know, maybe he'll want to listen to it more frequently. Calvin. Or anyone else, make sure to follow us on Facebook. So that's facebook.com/IELTS. Make sure to follow us on Twitter. That's at IELTS FS. And that's all the social media platforms we have. So Matt, I bid you a good week, and I hope you get rid of that cold you got going on, bud.
Yeah, thank you. I'm gonna need all the help that I can get.
All right, buddy. Take it easy.
You too now.